Welcome to episode 296 of In Touch with iOS, the show that talks about iPhone, iPad, Apple Watch, Apple TV, and related technologies. I'm your host, Dave Ginsberg, and my guest this week is Mr. Mike Potter. How are you doing, Mike? So glad you're here. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Dave, and I'm counting down to episode 300 of In Touch with iOS. We're getting really close.
We are four away from that. It's going to be epic. It's going to be epic. Also, epic is Jeff Gamet. How you doing, Jeff?
I assumed you were about to say Ben, but yeah, I'm doing all right. And especially since I'm here with all of you.
Yes. And even more especially epic is Ben Rethick. How are you doing, Ben?
Epic, but I haven't had my developer account banned because I don't have one.
Okay. Well, we got to fix that. So great to have everybody here this week. And my gosh, there was a lot of updates this week from Apple. We're going to be definitely digging into those, including iOS 17.4 was released out to the wild. All kinds of other news. And yeah, we just might as well just jump right into this here because it's just a lot to talk about here. So as I said, Apple did release iOS 17.4 as well as iPadOS 17.4. And it's definitely a big change, especially the thing with the EU, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. But most important thing is I'm going to tell everybody there are some two major security flaws that were in iOS 17.3.1 that you need to update right away, because these security updates are going to be including a impact as an attacker with arbitrary kernel read and write capability may be able to bypass kernel memory protections. Apple is aware of this, as well as Apple fixed the memory corruption issue that improved validation to patch that security hole. It also is patching a accessibility vulnerability and an issue with Safari private browsing that could allow locked tabs to briefly be visible while switching tab groups. So highly recommend, beyond the fact that it is a .1 update, that you should go out update now, because there's some pretty serious vulnerabilities in iOS 17.4. Would you not all agree with this? I hope most of you here have updated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you haven't updated by the time you're watching this, pause, update, resume.
Yes. I mean, that goes across all OSs, including Mac OS. Sonoma had a pretty serious flaw. We'll talk about that in a bit here. So the other thing was that stands out, as we've been talking about a ton here, is this has got the big EU app changes. You've got lots of other things that are going to be added here, but I think the big thing here is, and we're seeing that the residents of the European Union will now have new options. You'll be able to install apps from alternate app stores and marketplaces, install a web browser that's an alternate browser and without Ultra browser engines. You can manage your default web browser the first time you open Safari. You can also use an alternative payment option for apps in the App Store with the external purchases badge. And some options are going to require developer support, but we've only had it in our hands for about a couple of days. In the wild, there have been lots of news stories about the EU, and I know, Ben, you've been following it quite a bit over on Mastodon. I wonder, what is your thoughts on this?
So far, well, number one, the surprise is not only iOS is included, but iPadOS as well.
Right.
It wasn't, to my knowledge, it was never available in beta, those changes on iPadOS.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, whether it was just something that Apple thought they only need to test iOS, or they got a little note from the principal's office saying that iPadOS was required for compliance as well. Well, if you're in the EU and we're worried about alternate app stores not being on iPad, you don't have to worry.
Yep. How about you, Mike? Have you been following any of this the coverage on the EU changes, and any thoughts on what they've done for the EU?
What they've done and what they've not done for the EU?
How about both? Yeah.
We've got all night, Mike.
No. Look, they tick the boxes they need to tick, right? They said, check, check, check. Oh, we're done. That's all we need to do to comply with the letter of the law. So there was, I think we mentioned this last time I was on the show, there's some malicious compliance here. So I'm more interested not in what's going on right now, but in what will go on in the coming months. That's what I'm interested in. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. You know, I think anything they can do to maintain their dominance in the market as far as app stores are concerned. And by the way, this goes for others as well. This goes to Facebook, it goes to Google, it goes to Amazon, it goes all these companies. It's Apple that's getting all the press. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this pans out in the coming months.
And then Jeff, I know you have thoughts on this.
No. I'm kind of meh. No, the whole thing with iPad OS being included, I don't get why people were surprised, even though it wasn't included in the beta testing. Of course it was going to be included in the official release because it's part of the same App Store structure. Right. So yeah, here's my hypothesis. Apple did not include it in testing because it's literally the same code base.
Yeah.
And so they didn't need to do that. And leaving it off until they absolutely had to include it was probably Apple hedging their bets. Like if they're going to be able to convince the EU to let them do something else or not actually follow through with this, then the only place people would have seen this from a news standpoint is it was going to be on the iPhone and now it's not. And so it would have been a lower news thing because it didn't include as many devices.
Yeah, no, I would tend to agree with that. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on, see what's going to happen here. So number of the other changes that occurred, and we've been talking a lot about this. I'm going to have a bit of a segment just to talk about the podcast app. I am like blown away with the podcast app and what they've done with transcripts. So we're going to put a little more coverage on that just a minute here. But we've talked about all the EU stuff and, you know, it's not infecting us in the United States, but, you know, the folks that are listening in the EU, I hope you can take advantage of some of the things that you can get access to. Obviously, we can't. So a number of things that stand out here. One thing is messaging with Siri. The automatically send messages setting under Siri and search has been renamed Messages with Siri. And it is an option to set, probably should be saying S Lady because probably triggering everybody's Siri here. That, you know, we
did it again.
And I did it again, you know, I fall for it. So what it is, it's going to go and read incoming messages in a specific language like Spanish, French, German, Chinese, and many more. The change does not update the primary language that S Lady listens to and responds to, but limited to message playback. So again, we'll talk about podcasts. And we also have music recognition. Songs that have been identified with music recognition can be added to the Apple Music playlists, the Apple Music Library, and the Apple Music Classical. So yeah, they're actually giving some music classical love here. So other thing with the iMessage, there's a new security protocol. And that's with the iOS 17.4 and iPadOS 17.4. It's new state-of-the-art post-quantum cryptograph protocol. We've talked about this PQ3. PQ3 protects against against the Harvest Now, Decrypt Later attacks, where a malicious actor collects and encrypts the data from hopes of decrypting it with a quantum computer at some point. So they've really improved upon the security on iMessage, which is great. iPhone 15 battery health has got some improvements here. So you got the changes to the battery interface and this interface in the settings app on 15 models. These devices now will show battery health with a readout such as normal for a quick at glance way to see the status of the iPhone's battery. Tapping into the battery health readout shows the battery cycle count, manufacture date, and the first use will be listed. So they're giving some pretty good details with the battery now, because we've talked about it. I think we talked about last week about all about battery life and battery health. That this is super important. That they're being more reactive of giving them information on the battery, which is great. Stolen device protection was a huge thing they released. That was in 17.3. Now in 17.4, the the stolen device protection section of the settings app, there's now an option to require security delay always or only when away from familiar locations, because I think that was a big problem that you'd get locked out and because it was almost like immediate. But we're very happy that that this has been implemented, especially with all the press there was, and we talked about it on previous shows about a lot of social engineering here, being able to steal your phone very easily. So a number of things here, the stopwatch live activity is now going to be, it's adding a live activity function for the stopwatch. And when you activate it through the clock app, it's now going to show it up in the dynamic island in the lock screen, which I really like. That's really great. So much of other things, there's a clock widget now, which they've added. The Apple Cash card now has virtual card numbers. I don't use a lot of the Apple Cash card, but that's helpful with that too. You're going to have now real-time Apple Card, Apple Savings, and Apple Cash Budget app integration, which is going to give the 30-party budget apps real-time information for all those that I just mentioned. Hand gesture reactions are now going to be in video apps. So now there's a new API for developers that can actually be used to turn off hand gestures and reactions in video calls, because people were getting kind of annoying when you don't, I'm not going to do it because mine might go off, put your thumbs up or a heart or whatever. And and when Jeff gets it, maybe it'll work and maybe it won't. It's not.
There we got some hearts
from Jeff. So the Hey S Lady is the option to say that instead of S Lady is now available for French, German, and Spanish. And a big thing is I will hold this back to is CarPlay. There's been a bunch of updates in CarPlay, including the instrument cluster version. That's going to be some of the new cars in this year. So that there's quite a bit of stuff. Anything stand out with you guys with what I've talked about so far with 17.4? I know we've had only a few days of using the 17.4 other than Dino Ben having it in beta, but where are you at with this on some of these things, Ben?
Definitely podcast transcripts.
Okay.
This is number one, going to make it better, especially for listeners with hearing impairments. It also has the potential to make it a bit cheaper for podcasters.
Yep. We'll hit that just a minute here, because there's quite a bit. I know we all want to talk about, being a number of us are podcasters here. So why not? Let me, talk a little more about the Apple Cash Card and where the way you actually could find the cash card number. Apple is giving you a different way to spend your balance if you don't have if Apple Pay isn't available, and you can set up a virtual card number only by going into easily accessing this number in the Safari autofill and being able to use it to shop online where Apple Pay isn't available. So some people are using the cash card, so they do give you some options here, and it allows you to go right into the settings here and be able to get to it very easily. Let's just talk a little bit about CarPlay. And CarPlay, again, they're going to have the new instrument cluster experience for CarPlay. These, of course, are going to be cars that are being released in 2024. We've been anxiously waiting for this for a while, and no telling when those are going to be coming out. They say sometime in 2024. So they will have Apple Maps will present a nice new instrument cluster experience with the maneuvers and where to turn and all that. So you're going to see a much better experience to what most of us are used to on the small screens. But I think most of us still have the small screens when it comes to CarPlay. So it's definitely going to be an interesting way of thinking here. So yeah, there's a lot. There really is a lot of stuff that is out there. Obviously, we'll cover it as the next up weeks come up here with that we find more things that we've been looking close at. But yeah, I've been stalling here with let's talk about Apple Podcasts. I'm just absolutely just blown away of what Apple has done with this. I listened to this show. I wanted to see how this show was playing, and I'm telling you, it picks up the words flawlessly. Every single word that was said by all of us on the panel, myself, and I was looking at checking other podcasts too. And
all right, let's give it a test right now. Liggity doo bop, biddly bee bee boo.
All right, we'll check to see if that works. If you're listening to this show, so So I got a couple links in the show notes. One of the only links I did put in here is this is actually an Apple site for podcasters called Apple Podcasts for Creators. And it kind of gives you a little bit of an insight of how it's actually working. And I'll just kind of read this narrative real quick here. It says, with transcripts, your audience can read the full text of an episode, search the episode for a specific word or phrase, tap the text to play from that point in the episode. As the episode plays, each word is highlighted, making it easy to follow along. Transcripts can also be accessed from the episode details page. Touch and hold a podcast episode can reveal an option to view that transcript. I mean, I can go on, but I don't know of any other podcast app that's doing that. I mean, I'm a big Pocket Casts fan. I've been using that for a while. Is this something that could these other podcatchers be catching up? What do you think, Mike, on this?
Well, that was my question. I don't use Apple Podcasts. I don't think this is going to get me to switch to it. But as Ben pointed out, it's a fantastic feature, and there's so many accessibility positives to doing this. Now, we all knew that this was coming because we all have received the emails from Apple telling us for at least 2 months now that this was coming. This is fantastic. Now, what I wasn't clear on, though, is this information being embedded in the show before it gets sent out so that no matter what podcatcher someone is using, they're going to get the transcript? Or is it, you know, somewhat of a live transcription that's happening as you're listening to the show on Apple Podcasts? That's what I don't know the answer to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's a fantastic feature. And the fact that, as Ben pointed out, we don't really have to do anything for this to happen. That's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. When I wanted a transcript before, I ran it through Mac Whisper, which, by the way, is a wonderful app. If you don't own it and you need to do transcriptions of video or audio or whatever, it's amazing, especially on Apple Silicon. Not so hot on Intel, but it's fantastic on Apple Silicon, speed-wise. But that's what I would run it through when I needed a transcript, and it does a really, really good job, just as you pointed out, Dave, picking up every word. So, yeah, I don't have any experience with it in Apple Podcasts, but I think it's a very good thing.
Yeah. I just hit a couple of your points before we move to others here. You can provide your own transcript. So like if you did Mac Whisper, you could put that into the as part of the RSS feed transcript tag. And you also can download and edit the transcripts. They're available to download in the Apple Podcasts Connect. So you can make changes to the screen check with transcript if something wasn't right. And you're also able to check to see if you're hosting providers supporting transcripts, which I would hope they are. I'm using Libsyn, so I don't think any URs too. I think Mike as well. So, so no problem there. So, and you can also go there. It goes through all kinds of steps here. I know this is probably a little too more inside baseball here when it comes to podcasting, but I'm just ecstatic. I mean, I was just really pleasantly surprised how this worked. I got to bring you in here, Jeff. What have you had any chance to look at this, and what are your thoughts?
I looked at it just a little bit. And without having all the details, the under the hood details, I'm questioning if this will be just available for free, if you will, to third-party podcast apps. Because Apple is doing the transcription thing, which means they are using some sort of AI system, probably in-house, to manage this. So are they going to give that for free to all podcasters? Because that's a lot of intense processing there. And I'm sorry, I said for all podcasters, for all podcast apps. So if they are, wow, that's surprisingly generous for Apple. And if they're not, then I'm assuming for other podcasting apps to auto-create a transcript, that they will have to pay for a service, which then gets passed on to the podcast app users. So maybe that would be like a premium feature to use their transcription thing. But the part where it generates a transcript for you, and then you can have it tagged for the RSS, I'm assuming they're not doing anything weird there. And once it gets tagged for RSS and it's just part of your RSS thing, and other podcast apps would then be able to see the final transcript even if they're not getting to do a live transcript thing.
Yep.
That's my interpretation of how this works.
Yeah.
And that's what I was wondering. If it's going to become part of the feed, you know, if I'm subscribing to a podcast via Apple, you know, versus directly through Libsyn or whatever, if I'm subscribing to it from Apple, is that transcript, now that it's been done, they've gone through the effort, they've utilized the processing power to create this transcript.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just make it available to anybody who's subscribing to the show?
Right. I agree. Otherwise, they would have to do some kind of janky behind the scenes stuff to hide it from the RSS for other podcast apps. I mean, I can totally see Apple doing that.
You don't
that.
Think Apple would create a proprietary RSS feed, do you, Jeff?
What am I thinking? Of course not, Mike.
Gosh, no. Ben, you have lots of thoughts on this. Go ahead and tell us what your thoughts on this.
Yeah. You know, besides the benefits to both podcasters and users, it's a reminder that Apple has been an AI company for the better part of a decade, to the point where it's even built into their chips. You know, rather than, you know, use it for hallucinating chat bots, Apple puts its AI / machine learning efforts into features that are useful for everybody.
Yep.
So
check it out. I think it's a great thing. I mean, I'm hoping this expands out to other platforms too. I mean, it's, you know, it's pretty open to what transcripts do. You know, I actually put chapters in our every episode now. So we've got that distinguishes it, and it goes right to the chapter, and it's got all the transcripts that go under that chapter. So makes it a much quicker flow of being able to listen to an episode and be able to read along while we're doing the audio podcast. So it's a really a great thing. I'm just very impressed with this. So let's move on and talk about some of the other updates that were released. WatchOS was now released to 10.4. That just, interestingly enough, it just got released today as we record this. There was 2 days after iOS 17.4 dropped, so they had a little bit of a delay. And what it's doing is just a little bit over a month after 10.3 came out. A lot of things that really aren't coming out. One thing it is fixing was the ghost touch bug. You know,
finally,
that was such an annoying thing that would happen when all of a sudden you would be not touching it for any reason, and it would cause all kinds of problems. They did also add a setting to disable the double tap feature if you were, especially if you were using a Vision Pro. Can you imagine? I didn't even think about that. They have the Vision Pro and the double tap on the Apple Watch. You're doing that when you're using the Vision Pro. I forgot. I didn't even think about that. So
apparently someone at Apple didn't think about it either.
Yeah. So now if you've got a Vision Pro, I think the Vision Pro, you might want to turn it off on your Apple Watch. So it's, you know, of course, some enhancements, improvements, bug fixes. It does tap to show full notification settings and allows you to expand when you're doing the double tap on the notification. Using Apple Pay with confirm with Assistive Touch will now require a passcode for additional security, which is a good thing. And they were saying that it was resolving an issue where it caused some users to experience false touches on the display. So like we talked about that, the ghost bug, and fixes a issue with preventing contacts from syncing to Apple Watch for some users. So a little bit more of some bug fixes, not unusual because usually WatchOS is relatively uneventful after its initial release. Any thoughts on that, Ben?
I mean, Not much, except for that ghost touch fix. It's been a relatively pedestrian update for WatchOS.
Yeah, and you were running it for a while on beta, so it wasn't too bad. So not much else to say about that. But listen, anybody else had any other comments about the Apple Watch? I think
I have a question about the update.
Sure.
So when I started the update an hour ago, it told me that there was still 3 hours left.
I did mine.
And I checked just a few minutes ago, so an hour after I started it, 2 hours left. So, holy crap, a 3-hour update? Is it just me, or is this like a stupid long update?
I just did mine an hour ago, and I put it out on the charger, and I downloaded it ahead of time on the app on the iPhone before I threw it on the charger to update, and it, you know,
yeah, and that's what I did. About
15-20 minutes tops.
Okay, just me.
Yeah, all I have to say, Jeff, is Apple Watch updates are the worst.
They're absolutely the worst.
The whole process you have to go through to get the stupid watch updated is awful. And every time there's a release, I'm like, you know what? I'm not even going to bother. It'll eventually update itself, and then I don't have to worry about it. But when I deliberately try to update the watch, forget it. It never works. Never works. Drives me crazy.
Start a support group.
Yes, for sure. So
another support group.
There's so many of them out there. Speaking of support groups, HomePod.
Oh, 17.4
was released. I have not made sure that installed yet. I'm sure it hasn't done it. It's automated update just yet. This has a update with a music preference update, and it's the new software 17.4, and the update comes over a month after the last HomePod release. And they do say that S-Lady is able to learn what a user's preferences, a preferred media service is, eliminating the need to set a third-party app as the default, which includes the app name when asking to play something with S-Lady. The update also enables S-Lady to learn your preferred, so you don't have to even think about it anymore, which is great. Apple did remove the home app option that lets users to set a default media service as a result. So they made some changes there. So it seems like there's a lot of third-party changes and S-Lady changes, and not much else to improve its connectivity, right, Jeff?
Yep. I haven't had a chance to really put this update through its paces yet, because I installed it just a little while ago today.
Yeah, same here.
And actually, didn't it just come out today anyhow?
It did. Yeah.
Yeah.
WatchOS, tvOS, and HomePod OS all came out today.
And macOS.
I'll be doing that one later tonight. You can bet, though, that I'm going to be doing very specific commands to my HomePod to see how it responds. There's one thing I would love for it to actually do correctly now. There's a lot of things, but here's one. when I say, "Hey, S-Lady, I don't like this song," and it responds back and says, "Okay, I'll let iTunes or music or whatever know that you don't like this song." And then a little while later, that passive aggressive little butt plays the song. I want it to stop doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it's usually, "Hey, S-Lady, turn lights." I'll play a track of music in a genre you do not listen to.
Yeah, or it'll say, "I can show you that on your iPhone," or "mm-hmm," and nothing happens.
Yeah.
Yep, agreed. Do you have anything, Mike?
Well, one thing. So you forgot to mention the rumor that in iOS 18, that Apple is going to add the ability to listen for S-Lady specifically. So there's that.
Rumors. We don't deal with rumors.
Then it must be a fact.
Yeah. And B, Phoenix. Nobody mentioned the Phoenix. I am so excited that there is finally a Phoenix emoji.
I forgot about that.
Talk about emojis. I failed to mention that. Yes, there are
no moose that Phoenix. I'm aware of. No moose, but a Phoenix. So, you know,
yeah, there's that. Yeah. I was wondering, because we're about 40 years away from first contact.
Oh wow, we are.
We are,
and we better get that eugenics war happening pretty fast.
No.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, that was not a good war. That will not be a good war.
No. tvOS 17.4 was released today as well, as we record. And as always, nothing eventful there. It's just a bunch of bug fixes and improvements. That's all they really say. So make sure you go get that updated as well. Vision Pro at the 1.1. I still got to get used to talking about Vision Pro now with all the updates coming. This was released today as well. So there was a big jump today that released a lot of these updates here. So it is installed by going into the settings app and to the Vision Pro and selecting your general section. And you can go through software updates. It's very, very similar to what you do on other devices. The virtual keyboard has been updated to address bugs that was making the cursor positioning more accurate. And there's also bug fixes with the Mac virtual display. And that's good because, you know, we like, and I still have to do my demo. Ben hasn't done, have you done a demo on Visual Pro, Mike?
No, I have not. Someone else asked me that yesterday too. And I have not. I did, however, get to experience a virtual reality room in the mid to early 90s at a university in Chicago. I knew somebody who worked there, and I got the opportunity to go through that VR lab, which was quite cool for the time.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how far we've come and yet how far we have not come in that time. But no, I have not.
Yeah.
That's the short answer.
I need to do that. I'm hoping to do it this weekend.
Even if you don't plan on getting a Vision Pro, it's worth it just so you can see where Apple is headed with their computer technology.
Yep. Yeah.
So they did do some other updates and improvements with Vision Pro. The Persona was probably one of the biggest ones. That was they've added the Persona beta and EyeSight. It adds an option to enroll your Persona hands-free, improves hair and makeup appearance. That was a need because I remember the first ones were pretty bad. Improves neck and mouth representation. Okay. That's important too. And improves rendering of the eyes for EyeSight. So I guess they're doing some improvements here. So if you got the Vision Pro, go out and get your updates for that because they are out there now. So finally, I was going to talk a little bit about Mac OS. Sonoma 14.4 was released here. This is another update. This is the fourth major update to Sonoma. And some of the things that were added as well, there's emojis like you talked about, the Phoenix, there's the mushroom, the time, broken chain, shaking heads emojis are now in there. 18 people in body emoji support facing the opposite directions. Okay, a direction. And they had some bug fixes as well. There were some pretty serious bugs in Mac OS as well, so that you need to make sure that you're getting this update put through here right away, because it was pretty bad. So everybody here upgrade. Oh yeah, you said Jeff that you're going to be doing that later tonight. Mm-hmm. But everybody else got theirs updated.
Mm-hmm. Not yet. But to put a little exclamation point on what you just said, Dave, not only are there over 50 vulnerabilities fixed in this patch for macOS, but two of them are actually exploited right now. So it's super important to get this update installed. Yeah. I did not see if there were point releases for the previous versions of macOS. Did you happen to notice if there was
one
for
Ventura? Well, the last one was 14.3.1
update that came out.
There wasn't anything other than 14.3.1 that I remember.
So, okay.
And I'm updating them all the time. It's because of work. So
why? I meant 13, macOS 13.
Oh.
Did we see a Ventura?
You mean Ventura
to address some of these vulnerabilities? Or
did not see anything come through.
I did not see that go by. And normally there is a supplementary security patch for a previous release of macOS when something like this comes out. Well, but I literally got this story not too long before with the list of all the vulnerabilities, not too long before we recorded. So I haven't had a chance to look into it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the security reports that Apple puts out when the software updates roll out, they usually drop pretty quickly. And I just realized I'm still not seeing the security log email yet.
Mm.
And that security log email, it'll list all the OS versions that are addressed.
Yeah, you're right. They didn't come through yet. They might not come till tomorrow, maybe.
We may be saying that tomorrow. It's something to look for. If you're still on Ventura, look for security releases to come on the heels of this one, because that's very often the case.
Oh, for sure. So make sure you're doing all your updates. There's a lot. I said this was quite an update week this week, getting everything up to date, keeping things secure for sure. So let's jump into the news for this week. First story here. Apple updates rules surrounding the EU DMA compliance to address developer concerns. This was developers in the EU are now going to have approved ability to sign up for their updated terms. A one-time exit clause and new eligibility criteria should address many of their concerns. One-time exit clause.
Like you pull out and that's it forever. You're done.
That's what it says here. So,
okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Also says here finally that Apple has made it easier for developers to create alternative app marketplaces by not requiring a standby letter of credit under certain circumstances. So there's a lot of moving parts here with developers, especially in the EU. You know, what do you think on this, Mike? There's a lot going on here.
Well, you know, I'll be honest, I haven't been following this super closely, but, you know, it does seem to me as if the moving parts are there on purpose. Yep. You know, there's a reason they're making it as complicated as they are. And, you know, like I said earlier, I think we just have to wait and see how this actually works itself out. Is the EU actually going to enforce these laws that they put into place, or are they going to say, oh, well, okay, they're getting close enough, so that's good enough? I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. What do you think, Ben, on this? I know you've been pretty active talking about this.
Yeah. Right now it's kind of, as Mike indicated, a moving target. I think Apple and quite frankly, the other companies are trying to figure out how much they can get away with and not get fined tens of billions of dollars.
Hmm.
I think, honestly, we're probably going to get something, a more permanent set of rules around WWDC.
Yeah. Mm. Makes sense. Anything to add, Jeff?
Yeah, the whole thing with this is a moving target, and Apple and all the other companies that are impacted by this are figuring out what's the bare minimum that they can do to be in compliance, and what can they do to fit within those guidelines and make this deal as sour as possible for developers.
Yep.
Yeah. And while we're sitting here looking at this and saying, wow, Apple's doing a lot to make this complicated.
That's the point.
Apple's going to deal with a lot of complications of their own, because the EU is just the first to do this. Mm. Other countries will follow, and potentially here in the United States, we could get a mishmash of states doing their own thing.
Oh yeah.
And Apple will maliciously comply with these, and it's going to be super complicated before too long to know what you can do with your iOS device depending on your location.
Yeah.
No, I agree. All right, next story here. Apple has changed the trade-in values for iPhones, iPads, and Apple Watches. They even did Macs. This one article doesn't mention it. This was yesterday as we record here. They have adjusted the estimated trade-in values for the select models, and the changes are reflected on the website. So there were some slight increases in some of the models, like the 14 Pro Max. You can trade it in for $630 versus $620. Even go down the lower watches. They added $10 on the Apple's Watch Series 4. You can get that about that much. Mm-hmm. Still can get 100 and a drop a little for the Series 7 on that. But the Ultra, the Watch Ultra, the first model is $355. And the standard iPad is $250. So you get a whopping $90 for the iPhone SE 2. So I was pricing the MacBook Air because I'm very tempted to upgrade my. I know I'm crazy. I have the M2 MacBook Air from last year, and they're still giving me $670 to trade it in. And it's the base model, 8 gig with the 256 solid state. So, which isn't bad if you can think about it for a year.
And, well, and how much did you pay for that one new?
I paid $800, $850, something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So that's actually surprisingly good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I mean, comparing that as far as the performance of the M3, I mean, there isn't a huge, I'm looking at some of the benchmarks. Yeah. It's not a huge jump, but you know, it is an M3 mm-hmm. and you know, I got a new one and it is a spare model that I have. So, you know, we're very passionate about that.
Daddy needs a new M3.
He does. What do you think, Ben?
These prices have me wondering whether a 15-inch M3 Air or a refurbished base M3 Pro 14-inch might be in my future.
Yeah.
Because I can get a pretty good trade-in on my M1 Pro.
Oh, I agree. Mm-hmm. How about you, Jeff?
I would like to have been sitting in on the meeting when Apple was talking with the company that handles the trade-in process for them, when they were saying, we need you to sweeten the pot. And the company is like, this is the best we can do. And Apple leans in and says, see, I don't think you understood what I just said. I said, we need to sweeten this pot.
Oh my gosh, Jeff. Lastly, what about you, Mike? What do you think on this?
You know what? You mentioned you've got an M2 and you're looking at the M3. Oh my gosh, the M2 is still
good.
An amazing machine. And M1's for Apple good. To make that the entry-level MacBook Air it for $999.
Amazing. Yep.
You know, I read an interesting editorial that they almost kind of backed themselves into a corner on that one because it's such a good machine with minimal improvements to the M3 model. Why not buy the M2? And I think that would be my recommendation. If someone were looking for a general purpose MacBook Air.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's still available. M2. It's a great value and a fantastic machine. In fact,
that's why I bought it.
Unfortunately for my client, I just helped a client set up an M2 15-inch MacBook Air like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Might Wait, still I be smart. In that return window.
It's I don't feel bad about that. It was then a great machine, and it's a great machine now. And, you know, to drop the, they could have done something with the M1 and made it such a low level, entry level price point and just kind of drop the M2. They've done that before too. So I don't know. It's interesting what they did with that. Yeah. M3 is great. Do you need it over your M2 though, Dave?
No.
You don't.
Yeah, it does.
You're okay. Don't trade it in.
It's
you're fine, some, Dave.
I need intervention. I do.
Yeah. let me put it this way. My M1 Pro, there is still not a single task that I've thrown at it that has slowed it down in the slightest.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. Agreed. Remember how amazing we thought those machines were when they came out? They still are.
They still are. Yeah. An M1 Mac is still more Mac than most people will ever need.
Yeah, exactly.
And without hearing the fans ever.
Yeah. All right. More news that we had to talk about this week. Let's talk a little bit about that lawsuit. We love lawsuits, don't we? Apple was hit with a class action lawsuit over the iCloud's 5 GB limit and iPhone backup restrictions. A newly proposed class action lawsuit alleges that Apple has marked up its iCloud prices to the point that the service is generating the almost pure profit, quote unquote, as reported by Bloomberg Law. The plaintiffs are accused of rigging and the competitive playing field by only allowing iCloud to manage device backups and other storage needs. Apple devices holders are given a 5 GB of free iCloud storage space, but as iCloud revenues attest, most users have found that to be an inefficient, and we've talked about this a million times, about the storage needs and purchases supplemental storage, right? And we always would go and say, it's $1 a month. You get 50 gigabytes of data. That's okay. You could just, or 20 gigs. I think it's 20 gigs or 50. But I see the point of this. I mean, you get sick of these class action lawsuits, and I think this is something that, you know, I think we have a bit of a debate on this. What do you think, Jeff?
Actually, I think this lawsuit is total steaming pile of crap. This is seriously, I think this is attorneys chasing a check, and they think that they're going to be able to get a settlement out of Apple. And then they win. How can Apple be gouging us on price or overcharging us for something that you get for free? I mean, you don't even have to own an Apple device to sign up for an Apple ID, and then you have 5 gigs of free storage. And as far as I know, free in this case actually means free. So as far as what Apple charges for their other levels of storage and saying, well, Apple is just generating pure profit. That's what you do in capitalism. That's just how it works. It's okay. When you go to Barnes and Noble and you sign up for their rewards club thing, and I don't even remember how much it costs. It's, I don't know, what is it, like $50 a year or something? That is pure profit.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't they suing Barnes & Noble for having a members club that you have to pay an annual subscription for?
There's 20 or 30 million iPhone users out there.
Exactly. I seriously do not think this has anything to do with Apple storage levels and how much money they're charging for the levels compared to other companies. This is all about finding a way to spin up a frivolous lawsuit against a company that has incredibly deep pockets.
Yeah. What do you think, Ben?
Look, there have been a few lawsuits in the last few years that have had some validity. Mm-hmm. This is not one of them. It's, yeah, I don't know how much more that I can say that Jeff already hasn't. But I mean, they're giving people free storage. Is it enough? No. Is it, can you buy more storage at very reasonable rates? Yes, you can. I mean, you can get 2 gigabytes for 10 bucks, or 2 gigabytes, 2 terabytes for 10 bucks.
Wait, 2 terabytes? No, it's more than that.
Yeah, $9.99 is 2 terabytes. But it's honestly, A month.
I'm sorry. Yes.
Honestly, for what I do, it's just cost of doing business.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I see some of the other validity to it of the fact the matter is you have no control of your backup other than using a third-party app like we've always talked about, like iMazing. So, I mean, there's your option right there. If everybody's complaining about the backup of iCloud, then, you know, Apple widely accepts iMazing for you another method of backing things up.
Without and being able
to, locally. Yeah, using the Finder on a Mac, or you can also do it on a Windows machine too if you so dare. That you could do it that way. The only other thing you want to compare it to is other cloud storage services. You know, I give an example like OneDrive, Microsoft OneDrive. You only get 5 gigabytes of free data with OneDrive, so you have to pay for that service. And now, granted, I think OneDrive is a little more economical. I think you can get a 1 terabyte, and I don't think you pay more than like, you know, $2 or $3 a month. I'd have to look up off the top of my head. I'm just giving that it's not terribly expensive for that. The drawback to any of these services is the fact that even on a Mac, you know, if iCloud's running, most of these services cannot back it up automatically. You know, like, especially if you're doing it on a Mac, you know, they have OneDrive has what's called folder redirection, giving you the option to be able to back up your documents, your desktop and pictures, all that stuff automatically, as opposed to when letting iCloud do it. Well, when iCloud's running, OneDrive can't to do that automated backup. You look at Dropbox. Dropbox only gives you 2 gigabytes of free data. So it's even worse. You know, so, I mean, at least Google's a little more generous with Google Drive. You get 15 gigabytes. And so, again, you don't have the automation. That's the whole key of this here is it is automated when it comes to iCloud. I can see both sides of this coin. You're going to have people who are not as, we're obviously all of Apple fanboys here and girls that, yeah, we don't care because iCloud's fine and we're happy with it. But then you got the other side of that coin, people who are not Apple fans. Okay. And I can see where a lot of this lawsuit is kind of probably generated. They use iPhones because they like them and they think it's a better iPhone device than an Android in some cases, but then they have no control of, where the cloud is. Cause I mean, we all hear it all the time. You complain that I don't want to have to pay for cloud storage. 5 gigabytes is never enough because you eat up 5 gigabytes alone. And all the messages that you get with all the attachments you get all the time, not even counting photos. I mean, so, but again, more frivolous lawsuits. I mean, I don't know if they're going to prevail in this lawsuit against Apple.
I'd be surprised if this event makes it to a trial.
Yeah,
but sure, if you're doing photos, you're going to need more storage. And yes, messages, right, you can chew through 5 gigs of storage pretty quickly there. That said, for what Apple is offering you with the 5 gig, it's more than enough to handle what they intend it for, which is basic data synchronization for contacts and calendars, just keychain, that basic stuff. It's way more than enough. Excuse me. And a lot of people, even with messages, they'll never max out 5 gig with that. And it's, yeah, I'm just having a really hard time trying to find a way to spin this as a legit complaint.
Yeah, like I said, a lot of frivolous lawsuits out there. Our friend Chuck Turner always loves
the lawsuits, when we talk about lawsuits and the rumors.
He is, and the rumors. Those are his two favorite topics every time we talk. So we'll see what happens. I guess that's really the bottom line to this. So. This story was interesting. Over 200 Apple Watches were recovered in my home turf here, Illinois, in lakes, by metal detectorists and diver. Professional, he's called himself a metal detectorist. I haven't even heard that before. It says that the Apple Watches have become a surprisingly big part of his business. He has recovered more than 200 Apple Watches while diving into and searching. This is called the Chain of Lakes region, which is in northeastern Illinois. It's outside of Chicago. And he said that he found various items over the years, but it seems like he's finding a lot of Apple Watches and sometimes even iPhones or gold rings, prescription glasses, and more. But he says Apple Watches, however, have been amongst most common findings, and nearly all have had the original watch band attached. So, and the thing is, as far as the Apple Watches go, most still take a charge, but they've become a lock because it's difficult to get them back to the owner. So there's your problem there, because if the watch was paired to your iPhone, you're not going to unpair it. You need that iPhone to unpair it. So they're kind of bricks, I'm thinking. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah. So if you're going anywhere near water, make sure you have a very, very secure band.
Yeah. There's even a picture in this article showing all the mounds of Apple Watches you found. It's kind of funny.
Okay. I think that this is a case of people coming to the wrong conclusion about why they're finding all these Apple Watches with the original silicon watch band. It's not because that's the one that's falling off. It's because that's the one that people leave on their watch.
Yeah.
I bet that's it exactly. Also, I had no idea that Apple grew Apple Watches underwater, and now here's someone going out to one of their secret Apple Watch farms and harvesting them. Apple's going to be real happy about that.
Yeah, and they're still charging, which is kind of funny after all that. So that's interesting. So next story here, this is interesting. We've talked about this before with the blood glucose monitoring. The FDA just approved an iPhone-powered blood glucose monitor as Apple Watch sugar sensing plan still continues. And there's no prescription needed. there's has been some ongoing rumors that Apple intends to add support to the monitoring the blood glucose levels with the release of a future Apple Watch. But so far, that feature that the company simply hasn't been able to make happen. And now it seems like their closest thing they're going to have is to have a third-party device that can offer the same functionality and connect to an iPhone via Bluetooth. And now it's here without even having to have a prescription, because, you know, we have a lot of monitoring tools. You have to have a prescription here. So now, following the FDA assertion that any smartwatch that claims to be able to measure blood glucose levels is simply lying, the same outfit has now given a go-ahead for, this is a part of Dexcom's Stelo glucose biosensor system that can be offered without a need of a prescription. The product connects to the iPhone via Bluetooth, while the FDA says it isn't intended for use by people who have been diagnosed with low blood sugar or prescribed insulin, and it's still likely to be of use for some who are non-insulin dependent diabetics. So this is interesting. I think this continues to evolve. This kind of stood out to me, and when I thought to take a look at this a little further here, I know the technology's there. It's just going to take some time here. We've got measurements already. But Ben, what do you think?
As a diabetic, I think this is definitely a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that being said, don't rely on this kind of device without consulting your doctor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. Great.
I've been seeing comments from people saying that this is ridiculous if Apple can't get approval for a non-invasive monitor device for Apple Watch, how can this other company do it for their device? And it's totally reasonable for both of these things to be true, because we're talking about a different type of device. What is it? The Stelo in this case. It's a different type of device. It's getting the readings in a different way. And the fact that it sends data directly to your iPhone, okay, that's cool, but that doesn't mean it's the same non-invasive technology that the FDA is saying it won't approve. So that said, I love the idea of devices that give us more information about our health, especially if you have requirements like for diabetes. Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm. Give us more ways to have that data, feed it into HealthKit, and we get that information right away, and our doctors can get it in a timely fashion as well. Bring it on. I'm all for that. Like Ben said, check with your doctor and make sure this is the right the right tool for you. Wow, I'm sounding like a disclaimer at the end of a commercial.
Yeah, well, because it should be.
It is. Yes, it has to be. A couple more stories here. Apple TV Plus has added a limited time library of 50 movies to stream for free. Well, I guess you still have to have an Apple TV Plus subscription, but these are some limited time collection of movies that to stream as part of your subscription. Apple has done occasionally in the past to coincide with the themed release of new originals, but this is by far the biggest drop, and it's only available to folks in the U.S. Includes big titles like The Wolf of Wall Street, Saving Private Ryan, Mad Max Fury, but it also has Star Trek Beyond. So you do have that as one of the movies to see, and Star Trek for that matter. That must be the first
the Kelvin first Star Trek movies.
Yes. And so there's quite a list of movies here. Argo, that was a good movie. Oh, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I got to go back awesome and watch movie. That. I love that movie. And that's here in Chicago. Yeah.
Bueller.
So nice little list of movies here. What do you think,
Jeff? This is something that Apple is doing. Apple is not offering the same kind of streaming content service that Netflix or Amazon Prime are offering.
Yeah.
But this is a great way for Apple to offer more value to Apple TV Plus subscribers. And it totally makes sense, because in many cases, like you mentioned, they're getting movies that tie in to other properties that they offer. So there you go. If you're already paying for Apple TV Plus, you have some free movies you can watch.
You do. How about you, Ben?
Well, I mean, The Prestige and Catch Me If You Can are two of my favorites, two of the best movies I've ever seen. And there's literally nothing here that isn't quality. So just go on a Netflix binge on Apple TV Plus.
There you go.
There you go. There you go. And lastly, let's talk a little bit about photo editor Luminar. It's arrived on the iPad and Vision Pro. This is the team that's behind the popular Mac photo editor, Luminar Neo. It's now unveiled its first iPad app. Just like the Mac version, Luminar for iPad offers a number of features to help edit any image. One of the highlights of the editor is four AI-powered tools: Enhanced AI, Sky AI, Structure AI, and Relight AI. With those, you can do a number of tasks like replacing skies, unlocking details, and even realigning a photo with a single click. So they've got some really nifty features in here. And this is nice to see. This is also available for the Vision Pro. So I'd be interested to see how you do photo editing on a Vision Pro by using this too. So what do you think, Jeff? I always thought this was a pretty cool app.
It's not one that I use regularly, but that doesn't mean it's not a cool app. Sure. And I love that we're starting to see more apps show up as Vision Pro native. And I've had so many people comment to me that one of the things that they want for Vision Pro is a legit image editing tool. Mm. And here you go.
Yep. There you go. And Ben, you got the last word on this.
Luminar is not an app I'm familiar with. I am a Photomator guy, but I am downloading it now as we speak, since it's free to download from the App Store.
Yeah, 7-day trial. It is $4.99 a month. I think it's $29.99 a year if you wanted it's a subscription-based app. So, I mean, that's part of life here with applications. You're seeing subscription services. So if it's something you like, I would recommend checking it out. At least you got a free trial. You can try it if you like it. So, Mike, tell us a little bit about what's going on with MacStock. I know that you've got some news you could share with us and some you cannot, but we want to hear an update on what's going on with MacStock.
Oh, I got to come back on here in a week or two.
Yes.
I'm so close to putting out the announcement for selling tickets. It's one of those things where as I started reworking the MacStock site, I realized I had to kind of gut some things and start fresh.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of in that process right now. Reinvented the way tickets are going to be purchased. Had a couple conversations with folks about the workshops that we're going to have this year, which is brand new. We're adding a third day, the first day, Friday, the 12th. By the way, MacStock is July 12th, 13th, and 14th. The first day, the 12th, is all new to MacStock, and that is a day of workshops. So right at the moment, we're planning on 490-minute workshops. We have room for more if we have more folks sign up for it. But yeah, that's going to be great. And so to accommodate that, and then to accommodate the regular MacStock weekend, Saturday and Sunday, with all these fantastic talks and presenters that we have, so much work to do. But just about ready to announce things. We have had a number of folks love to see at MacStock every year agree to present. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn when I say Allison Sheridan is going to present this year. Mike Schmitz is going to present this year. Relatively newcomer to MacStock, Dave Ginsberg, said he's going to present this year.
Oh, that's me.
I believe Jeff Gamet may present.
That's totally up to Mike Potter. But if he says yes.
Coming back this year, Brett Terpstra is coming back this year to present. He wasn't able to join us last year. He's going to be coming back again this year. So we have a lot of favorites. And my plan is to do what we did last year, too, and introduce a number of new faces to MacStock stage as well. So great. I'm very excited about it. I am planning to get the tickets ready to launch, the site ready to launch, and the tickets ready for sale this weekend. So if anyone's interested, they can just go to max.conferenceandexpo.com. And even though you're going to see last year's website right at the moment, you can still sign up for the newsletter. And as soon as that information is ready, you'll catch it there. And then, of course, you can follow me at Macstock Expo on Mastodon. So that's another great way to find me as well.
Great. All right. What a great show. There was a ton to talk about this week. Lots of updates and lots of great stuff. And that's a wrap for this week. Please send your comments, questions, and suggestions to our email address, which is feedback@intouchwithios.com. You can follow us on Mastodon at intouchwithios at techhangout.social. Support the show by buying me a coffee at intouchwithios.com/coffee. We would really appreciate it. You can also become a patron of the show by going to patreon.com/intouchwithios. We have 2 tiers available to support the show. We would really appreciate it. Make sure you like, share, and subscribe so you are notified when we are live streaming, which is on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and 5 p.m. Pacific. Thank you, Cletus, for being out there today and others that were in the YouTube chat live. That's our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/intouchwithios, where you can watch the current and past live streams as well as listen to past shows. Visit In Touch with iOS Magazine on Flipboard, where many of the topics we discussed are flipped into that magazine. The link is in our show notes. You can subscribe to the show in your favorite podcatcher, including Pocket Casts, Overcast, the newly updated Apple Podcasts with transcripts, and many others. But better yet, just go to our website, which is intouchwithios.com, where all the links to all the ways to listen to us is on that website. I am Dave Ginsberg, and you can find me on Mastodon at DaveG65 at Mastodon.cloud. So, Mike, thanks for being here. Where can people find you?
Thank you so much for having me, Dave. I'm sorry I had to cut out early, but if anyone is looking for me, they can find me at formaceyesonly.com and, of course, max.conferenceandexpo.com. And then if you are looking for me on the socials, you're going to find me on Mastodon. The server is tooting.ninja. So it's tooting.ninja/@MacStockExpo or @4MacEyesOnly. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being here, Mike. We appreciate it. Jeff Gamuth, thank you so much for being here. Where can people find you?
Hey, thank you so much for letting me hang out with you and with Ben and Mike. It's just awesome. I love it. Where can people find me? How about on social media? Jay Gamut everywhere. I'm posting stuff on Mastodon, Instagram, and Threads. And then for shows, Tuesdays, Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live. Then here on Thursdays with you, Dave. And then for the British Tech Network, Thursdays for the Big Show, Fridays for the Mac Show. And also Brian Chaffin and I do The Context Machine.
Great. Thank you. Last but certainly not least, Ben Rathick, thank you as always for being here. It's always a pleasure having you here. Where can people find you?
Well, Dave, you can find me at social media or on social media at Ben Rathick. You can find my ravings. Yes, my ravings at rathick.tech. And you can find me on all those places that Jeff just said, except for the Context Machine. Yes, I'm doing it smarter, not harder.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it. And thank you for listening. We really hope you enjoyed the show. We enjoyed doing it. And we'll talk again soon.